Good to talk to you.
Oh, it's lovely. We never ever get a chance to chat.
We don't. Every time I come to a show and even Polari or anything, you always have a mob of people around you, and I just don't want to horn my way in. So
I
thought,
I just wish you would, because I'm usually being bored rigid by somebody, although that's between you and me. Not really. People are lovely there. So.
But it's true. You always have such a huge circle around you. People can't wait to get in a word edgewise. I love it.
Well, it's very nice. It's lovely for me being older and actually having people, you know, still wanting to talk to me. So I'm really very flattered, actually.
And they do want to talk to you, Miss VG Lee, because they know how talented you are and they enjoy everything you do.
Well, why don't my friends and family feel that way?
Do you find that because most of the time they're the center of what you're discussing, it keeps them at arm's length?
That is very true, very true.
Mine too. They preface everything with, and don't say this on the show.
No, that's fine, yeah.
But the thing of it is that all these people that are in your life, constantly are the basis for so much of your comedy and your writing. And that's awesome, because every time we go somewhere and I see Mary, I immediately think, MM, there's MM, Mike or Mary from the posts.
No, I mean, it is lovely. Most people are very good-natured about me using them, although, I do get into trouble from time to time, so it's not without pitfalls.
Does Les know that he is a constant source of worldwide entertainment on your Facebook?
Well, he certainly used to, and he tried to get me via Facebook, and I defriended him. And we probably had a bit of a 6-week standoff. I think he was quite offended, but it affected how I wrote. Whereas MM is very good natured, she'd rather be mentioned than not. So I can say what I like, really.
That's hilarious. Now we went to see Lady of Wild West Hill.
Lovely.
Yeah. At the Marlboro.
Yes, and that's right, yes.
That had a semi-autobiographical feel to it.
Yes, it did. I suppose it was partly based on my neighbour, but it was fictionalised somewhat. I'm being cautious here because of my neighbour, really. I do use my life. Not necessarily in every book, but certainly the early books and in articles and stuff like that that I do now.
I always find it a little bit easier in that respect because you are drawing on something, that's happened or some period of time in your life, which makes you be able to kind of everything flow a little bit better than when you're trying to do just a big broad fiction. You have no boundaries and no limits, and having experienced the things you're writing about kind of reins you in a little bit.
I think it does. Talking about people that I do know, I often, even if I don't have their exact words in their heads, because I do listen to dialogue a good deal, I feel I know what they would say in the circumstances.
Right.
So
right.
It comes easier.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What I know this is going to, I don't even know how to phrase this, but like, what were you doing in the earlier part of your life before you jumped into being an author and a comedian and event hostess?
Well, I started off working in fashion. I was in a bridal salon, which is what my new book is about. Then when I was 30, I went to art college and I worked for 20 years with Mary in London, and we were women sign writers and mural painters.
Oh, wow.
So that's what we did right up to 2000, right up to millennium. And she's still a sign writer, but I'm a writer, I can just about live on my writing now.
Oh, that's amazing.
But we had a fab time. We decided in our late 20s that we would go for jolly rather than well off. And we were never well off. We'll never be well off. But we had such a laugh. We had 20 years doing lovely work, but also really having a laugh.
That's the most important thing, I think. Some people, they just get it wrong and they spend their whole lives digging, to be well off. And they forget about how fun everyday life can be.
Well, that's the most important thing, because, to be honest, you know, I'm in my 60s now, and it hasn't really affected me terribly, not focusing on money. I'm not well off, but, you know, I've got food and things, and I've got so many friends and people, you know, we exchange stuff, and I benefited. I made the right choice, and so did she. I think she would agree she made the right choice in her late 20s.
Oh, I'm certain of it. I'm certain of it, because I know that every person that I meet that knows you always has something good to say.
And oh, well, that's so lovely.
It really is. And your tight little group of friends, Paul, DJ, you guys all have that common thread, you know, where you're successful authors, and you guys are so diligent about your writing group, and it makes me envious every time I read a post, because like I see how it motivates and how it serves you, you know, to do it. And I think to myself all the time, like every time I see that post, that should be my trigger to sit down and write.
Well, I would never have thought a writing group would have worked so well. I've been in them in the past, and often they're, you know, there's infighting, there's little jealousies and things like that, but our writing group works brilliantly. We are so supportive of each other. We are not necessarily nice to each other about our work. We're really hard on it, on each other, but it does mean every week you've got to do something.
Right. It's such a commitment, but it's so worth it.
It really is. I certainly don't think I'd have got... I've been working on the novel. I'm nearly finished for 20 years, and I would have been working on it probably till death without the writing group. I know it's going to get finished now within the next few months, but otherwise I don't think it would have done. It's given me structure and a responsibility to the others.
It's just, you know, that's exactly what it should do. And I always think to myself, because even, you know, every meeting, every business meeting, you know, anything, it always has that little bit of social, you know, becomes like a social thing. It's like you want to get your business out of the way and then have it become social. But somehow the social creeps in first and kind of interferes. But you guys are just, you're so, you know, nose to the grindstone. And I love that. So I've decided that every time I see a post about the writing group, that's going to be that's from now on my trigger is, even if it's just a paragraph, I need to write something when I see that.
No, that is really good, because we are very good. We do probably between 2 and 3 hours working, about an hour on each. And then it is a wonderful moment when Paul goes upstairs and opens a bottle. And that's usually about 6 o'clock, and it's heaven, and you hear the crisp going into the bowl, and we've earned it.
It's a reward.
Our reward. He comes down with the bottle and the glasses and the crisps, and you think, "Yahoo, we earned this."
I absolutely love it. I'm so jealous. I'm so envious.
It's very jolly.
it's adorable, but like I said, your circle of friends is so big and so broad. So this event that you have coming up is with Bah Humbuggers.
Yep.
And this is not without a little controversy.
No, we've had a hell of a lot of controversy.
What in God's name happened?
No, I mean, it has just been over the dyke issue that Sussex LGBTQ took offence to having the word dyke on their Facebook page. And it all hell let loose, basically all supporting us.
Right.
But even so, I give them their due that they never back down. So they're tough kiddies. It really went sort of like in so much media it has appeared in.
It did. It really took on a life of its own. If, you know, just from one of your posts, just saying, can you believe that they found that the dyke of the halls, they found the word dyke offensive. And the funniest thing is that I really feel like there is a cutoff, like around the age of 35.
Yeah.
You know, so under 35 still feels that the word is derogatory and offensive.
Yeah.
And over 35, it's more like, screw you, man. We've earned, you know, earned this right to say the word proudly.
Yeah, I think it's a strong word.
I do too. I mean, I take no offense to it. It's all in the context that it's used in.
Hmm.
So, you know, you big fat dyke, and yeah, that sounds shitty coming from a straight person yelling at you on the street. But Dyke the Halls, I mean, oh my God.
It was so obvious that it was just a, you know, it was a pun.
Yes.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And to be honest, anyone who knows Rose and I would know that, you know, we don't mean anything offensive to anybody.
Exactly.
It was spawned in fun and laughter.
Right.
And it was just taken so seriously.
It really was. It amazed me, though, but it just goes to show, like, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and we were saying how over here, it's so different in the States where, you know, one quote from anybody gets blown up, you know, and it goes to the media and it's on Gossip Cop and Radar Online and TMZ. And, you know, people just can't say anything freely without, you know, the media picking it up and making it so much bigger than it is. And over here, you don't see it that often. So it was so surprising that took off the way it did.
Amazed me. I went away for a day and I came back and there were just, I had literally hundreds of posts and emails, and it took up the whole of our week, both Rose and I, because we just couldn't get away from it because there was such a lot, so many comments, people wanted to write about it, blog about it.
Yeah.
It just absolutely took off. It was extraordinary. I mean, it did us some good, but it didn't do us loads of good. And it certainly wasn't done for publicity, because we would never have, you know, if you're looking for publicity, you wouldn't write Dyke the Halls. It's so weedy.
Right. I was going to say, so have ticket sales, you know, skyrocketed now?
No, they haven't. they've done really well in London, and they didn't do badly in Brighton, but it was still probably, I think we were about 2/3 we sold out on Sunday, and a little less than that on Monday. So people, you know, people have less money and they're still not buying perhaps tickets so easily. So whatever the publicity perhaps is, it's done as, you know, our names have been mentioned.
Right.
But for the shows, it didn't sell out, but I really hope it will in London, because it's a bigger audience and perhaps more people know us, really.
Well, I think that, you know, the word is slowly getting out about the pickled onions, and that's going to be the deciding factor here.
I think it is a very funny show, and the mixture of Rose, who is non-fiction, she's a historian, but she also plays a banjolele and sings, and me, who is fiction and a bit of stand-up comedy. It's a good, you cannot get bored listening to it. It moves along very quickly.
And how did you guys like sit down and say, was the concept behind it, let's throw a party for all the people that don't want to be festive?
That was pretty much how it came about, Denise, actually. We were just chatting and we both found we didn't like Christmas, and we both do quite a lot of performing, so we said, should we do a show? So I think I certainly watched too many Judy Garland films when I was young, where they wanted to put on a show right here in town and that sort of thing, and just the idea of doing a show seemed a good one, so we did it.
Read some of the review. The Planet London did a review on it, and it sounds like it's going to be so much fun, whether you like Christmas or not. It's just going to be fun.
It's really, and to be honest, there is a definite Christmas theme, whatever we say.
It's great.
It's an alternative Christmas.
An alternative Christmas. That's perfect. I mean, really, starting from the controversy all the way through the show.
Yeah,
it really is an alternative Christmas thing. It's gonna be, I think it's gonna be great. As a matter of fact, we are we're all set to attend and thrilled that it's actually nearby, this upcoming one on December 15th.
Oh yeah, it's December the 15th. Yes, are you quite near Streatham?
Not too far.
Oh, that's
so it's
good.
Not a big journey, but yeah, it'll be a nice evening because it's a Sunday, and that's you know, where everybody's dreading Monday. We can actually have a little bit of fun on Sunday.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. Mike Romero will be there as the elf.
Excellent.
So
I've seen some pictures. She cracks me up.
She makes a very good elf. It's not her first performance as an elf. She's been an elf at various parties over the years, so she knows
her
duties.
Because she's so tiny, she's so compact that she's actually perfect for the elf part.
She really is. Yes.
Now you guys also were at Elfest too.
Yes.
And this was great, and I'm really, really upset that the fact that we're always working at the same times.
Well, that is it, isn't it?
It's tough.
That one has friends like yourselves that are all doing things, and we never get to actually see what each other do.
Exactly. And my co-host flew over from the States expressly for Elfest, and I've been talking about you and your books and your comedy on the show for 3 years now. So she was so thrilled to think that you were going to be there and you're finally going to get to meet. And then it just never happened. And I was like, I can't believe this whole Elfest went by and I never got to introduce you to Donna.
Oh. No, but I'm not surprised. It was that sort of thing. And so many things were on at the same time.
Yeah.
That everybody wanted to go to. So I thought it was quite hard to... I didn't see half the things I wanted to see.
Yeah.
So,
As a performer, especially at those kinds of events, it's exactly what happens every single time. Luckily for us, we get to see every band. So,
yeah.
But we never really get to do anything else unless it's really early in the morning. And
no, well, I think when you're doing work during the day, even your mind is on your work.
Yeah.
It's coming, isn't it? Although you want to see things, you can't concentrate if you've got to be somewhere else at, say, 2 o'clock. And I do focus. In fact, I'm not a lot of fun at all on these things because I'm totally focused on what I've got to do and snappy until it's done.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say, with the complete opposite. Donna and I are like stuffing our face with Pringles and talking to fans and everything 2 seconds before we have to go on. And then,
oh, how lovely.
Yeah,
I'm just a very neurotic person. So I'm always hours early for anything.
But you have to be. You really do, because you're traveling usually so far.
Yes, that is it. And I can't afford to, I have to get early trains because I can't afford to get the exact right train in case it's late or something. So I have to set off early. But even if I'm going up the road, somebody says come around at 11 for a coffee, I'm always hanging about by about 1:45, going in the shop and patching
up. But you know what, though? You don't find that very often, especially as a host of things. If I'm expecting somebody to call in for an interview at 11 and they don't call in until 11:20, it drives me insane. Like, just be prepared,
That is extraordinary because, there are people like that who just treat things so casually.
Yeah,
I like the confines of being told I've got to be there and I will be there.
Yeah.
People often worry because now I'm getting older that I won't. How are you going to get there? Just don't worry about how I'll get there. I will be there.
I love that.
And I'll be there.
I love that because that's another thing that I'm so envious about is that you are traveling constantly. You're always on a train or you're always, getting a lift somewhere. And I mean, it amazes me because I'm like the complete opposite because I'm not used to public transportation.
Oh, well, I think if you're not used to it, then you probably think it's better and more brave than it is. I mean, you basically sit on the train and you fall asleep in a horrible manner. That's it.
It's true. I have seen people drooling down themselves. And yeah, it is. But that's another thing I'm fearful of, is that if I close my eyes for a second, will I miss my stop?
Well, I'm really fortunate because I come into Charing Cross, which is the last stop, and I get on. Hastings is the first stop. So I can't miss my stop, although many do.
You're on either end. That's perfect. We usually use Morden.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I'm never fearful about getting home. It's just getting to where I need to be.
Yeah.
So, and I just haven't learned all the schedules and the changes and, all that kind of stuff yet. So I'm still like extremely fearful, and I don't like to carry anything. Like, I've really scaled down my belongings to my cell phone, my keys and my wallet.
Yeah.
So I don't have to carry a bag or anything. And I look at these people that lug these enormous backpacks and bags with them. And I'm like, wow, it's just like being at the airport.
I mean, that is quite funny because when I did the Brighton show on Monday, I had a red plastic trolley that was stolen from B&Q, and I'd got a table in it, all my clothes, everything, books, and all my props, and coming back and forth with that. But I'd look like a bag woman.
I noticed at the Marlboro Pub, at the Marlboro Theater, when we went to see your show, and you rolled that trolley on stage and set everything up. That was just incredible to me, because I've been involved with theater in the earlier part of my career for at least 10 years. And I know what it takes to do a one woman show with nobody there. You didn't even have a stage manager. I mean, you were doing everything on stage, remembering your lines, setting up your props. And I my jaw was just hanging open for the better part of that show, because I was absolutely amazed at what you pulled off in that time frame.
Oh, well, thank you. I have to admit that as I did it more and more, I moved less and less furniture. Because honestly, it was a killer picking up all those tables and chairs.
Yes, yes. And I love that, the lights were really never down for it. So you just incorporated it right into what you were doing.
No, it was truly amazing.
It really was. It was incredible.
And when I did it at Hellfest and at Bookfest in Northampton, and just the amount of stuff I was carrying was too much. So I shall have to think twice before I do things like that again.
That was incredible. What do you find, because as I was saying before, it's so wonderful, like when you do a Polari event or a book signing or anything, that you are always so accessible to the people that come, the audience, the people that want the signatures and to chat. What do you find that most people are so anxious to talk to you about? What do you find most people are most anxious to talk to you about?
Quite interested that I'm older. They're often looking for some sort of pointers for themselves, because a lot of people, even when they're sort of like in their early 40s, late 30s, are often looking for something. And I think the fact that I did start late, and it's fairly well known that I started writing it in my early 40s, which is quite late, I think that sort of often fascinates people, but it gives them a hope.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm often asked about, how did I start writing? How did I start doing comedy? It's like, if I can do it at that age, they think, we might make the change. So that's the sort of question that I get most frequently.
It's amazing. It's true. But the funniest thing about it is that your following, you know, your readers and the people that come to your shows, it's a really big, vast age range.
Yes.
Like, I've seen people there, you know, especially at Elfest and these things that have that big, you know, that big range of people. You have people there that are in their early 20s, and then you have people there that are in their 70s. And everybody, I think, takes away the same thing. You know, they know that they're going to be entertained. They know that it's going to be, the reference is everything they can understand. Some things aren't as topical, but it's still funny, and it's a learning experience. And for other people, it's like a retrospect. So it's awesome.
I find it quite frightening sometimes. It does seem to work over the ages. When I do Laughing Cow's comedy, which I do at the Retro Bar down at the Embankment, and sometimes I go in and 80% of the audience are under 30, are young women under 30, and I sit there waiting to go on, and I think, they're going to hate me. What have I got for them? And it's amazing. Their faces light up, and they do laugh, and it's, I am so lucky, Denise. You know, I've really got, I have such a bad time. I'm very lucky. I'm so lucky to have such good audiences, and that young women are as willing to laugh as older women. So
right, there's an interest there. You know, whether they're learning something new or something they didn't know before, and you always put a great, like, dry, sarcastic twist on something that brings the comedy element to it. Because I know myself, like, I often thought, I wonder how this would translate in the States.
Yeah.
And they're so very, I mean, I want to say that they're so into pop culture, but they're actually beyond it. They're always looking for the next thing. And they're never looking over their shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that I think they're missing, is that, you can pick, especially in the States, you can poke fun at the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of poke fun at the 70s, even though that's pretty much done.
Yeah.
But nobody thinks about beyond, you know, way back when things, I mean, that's, there's some good, funny stuff that people, you know, just seem to dismiss because they're always looking ahead so much, you know, that I wonder, like, I don't know how well it would translate in the States because of that element of always trying to be one step ahead of everybody else and not taking a moment to look back and say, this was some funny stuff that went on back then.
Yeah, I mean, I think people can translate if, because the thing is, people may have had different experiences, but, you know, all the anxieties are still the same. Mm-hmm. People still want to be liked, fear not being liked. In the 60s, we were worrying about what clothes to wear. People are still worrying about what clothes to wear.
There's
loads of overlap.
Yeah.
A very, very, on a basic level, getting older was probably far worse in the 60s. but you can still look back and think it's funny. You can think back to your grandmother and how she behaved. So I think people can work back.
Yeah.
But they don't often have the opportunity.
Right. Their mind's not open to it yet.
Yeah.
Because they haven't found the humor in it. So yeah, I think, but I know that every time I would go and see a comedian on stage in the States at any of the festivals, anything, the minute they started talking about their childhood is when it would get funny.
Yeah.
And then you are going, you know, backwards, but take it one step further and put a comedic twist on some of the history.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I really love about your work is, you know, especially in the period pieces and stuff, is that it's, first of all, it's so well written. And the comedy is intelligent comedy. You know, it's not like a big, broad, dumb joke that's been simmered down for people, you know, to really get it. It's intellectual comedy, and that's what I like about it. And it's woven into these great storylines.
Well, I feel more and more, I was saying to somebody the other day that I'm feeling much more confident even in the stand-up, because I am more and more moving into the storyline of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do stand up now, I am insisting on also doing a tiny reading, very short.
Yep.
But and I did it at Laughing Cows last time, and it went down very well indeed. But I'm also talking about getting older, but really, you know, the things that we don't like to think of, or when I was young, I didn't like to think of older people having sex or anything like that.
Right, exactly.
So I'm getting a little bit into that. Talking about funerals and music that people want at funerals, and sometimes I think that, oh, you know, because it's frightening, but they laugh. Laugh. So
it's
I'm
true.
Just seeing what I can get away with now.
That's what I like, because it really brings about an element of fearlessness
to
your work. Just to, you know,
I try.
I think you do very well. I'm so impressed, and I can't ever talk enough about you when I'm talking to my friends in the States and just telling them what they're missing. It's just, you know, I feel fortunate to have stumbled upon you and your comedy and your work and your books. Now you said you're working on a new one that's taking place in a bridal shop.
That's right. And it's set in the 1970s. So we will see. But with a bit of luck, it'll be out next year.
Oh, brilliant.
But
And Always You, Adina, is doing really well.
It has done very well. I'm very pleased with that. And funny enough, because The Comedienne, my first book, has just come out on Kindle. And that's done. It's doing really well on Kindle. And that, you know, that's 13 years old now. So
see? It's a whole new wave. I think that's a large part of why you do have that range in your audience, because, you know, people are able to download stuff to anything, a tablet, a Kindle, or their phones, you know, and they spend so much time commuting, you know, that everybody always has a book in their hand. And once you find that, you know, that you like someone's style of writing, you go back and you find all their work and you get it, download it, and you've got a whole fan base there that probably wouldn't be open to it if you said you have to go to a bookshop and buy the book.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Kindles have had just such a huge effect on publishing.
Yeah.
But the whole, you know, Facebook, Twitter thing has also, it's made such a difference. difference.
Oh, yeah. You don't know who you're reaching, you know, when it comes to Facebook and Twitter. It's just amazing.
It's fantastic. Yeah. You get people, you know, coming to events. I've met so many people via Facebook who I consider real pals.
Yeah.
So this morning, somebody sent me some evening gloves that they were turning out. I think their mother's or an aunt's thing. And, you know, and I've never met the person, but they know that I like evening gloves. And how nice is that?
Isn't that amazing?
And that's
on
Facebook. That's something I just met on Facebook about 3 weeks ago. So
it's wonderful. I mean, we're the same way. We just, Gemma and I just bought a house, and I happened to be talking about it on the show that I was putting together. I was starting to get addicted to Amazon, shopping on Amazon.
Yeah.
And so I made a wish list, and we mentioned it on the show. And the next thing you know, a listener had bought me salt and pepper shakers that were on my wish list.
Oh, how lovely.
So it's just, it is. I mean, it's incredible.
That's a sort of quirky, cheering thing that can happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you hadn't got Facebook or Twitter, that would never, you know, never have happened. It's
exactly.
So hard to reach the people you reach now.
Exactly. It's a great way to engage too and get a feel for your audience and what they're thinking.
Yeah.
And you know, it's also a bit distracting. I know that I have to, you know, close out my Facebook window and close out my Twitter window when I'm really getting focused, because it is such a constant source of distraction all the time.
No, it is. It is a terrible distraction. I have to, if I'm really working, like yourself, I have to keep off it.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's like having a friend sitting next to you and you keep stopping to chat to them.
Yeah, it's true. So you guys, is the last Bah Humbuggers event on the 15th, or do you have one more after that?
No, that is the last one, and we then pack up for Christmas.
And that's a wonderful thing, and that's the one that's in Stratham, and that's the one I believe we're attending, so I'm really looking forward to it.
It's so lovely. Well, I look forward to seeing you.
You too, and I so appreciate you taking time out of the middle of your day when I know you could be doing more important things.
Oh, not at all. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Val. Take care.
All right. Lots of love. Bye.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.